Prime Time Replay from Money FM 89.3. Focus, hosted by Howie Lim and Bernard Lim. Only on Money FM 89.3.
And on Thursdays, we put our focus on transport issues in a segment called Move. This week, we're speaking with To Ting Wei from the Straits Times.
SMRT Trains has revealed spiraling losses on the back of a high operating costs. Spending on repairs and maintenance accounted for about 71% of rail fare revenue, up from just 45% 3 years ago. And so the question is a fare hike inevitable? Well, Ting Wei, you've been chasing the story. I understand that you've spoken to some experts as well who said commuters should expect a fare increase eventually.
So actually for this fare increase, it isn't something very unexpected in the future, because Transport Minister Khaw Boon Wan has said himself in Parliament just last month that the government is subsidising quite a lot of the rail operators' expenses. So with the expenses going up, it's not possible for the government to keep increasing subsidies. So if you're not talking about a fare increase for the commuters, it's a matter of the government putting in more subsidies. And at the end of the day, that comes back to the taxpayers also. According to the expert I spoke to, Dr. Walter Tessera, he said it's a matter of which pocket the money comes out from. At the moment, because the government said they are not going to increase the subsidies already, because I think, if I'm not wrong, the level is at around 30% already. And they are projecting to spend quite a few billions on subsidising the rail operators in the next few years.
Pockets is where it's going to come from now, Ting Wei, is what you're saying.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, like, nobody has come out outright to say that it's going to happen and when is it going to happen. But based on all the signs, it seems quite likely that it's going to happen, because when you look at SMRT's results now, the losses almost doubled from the previous year. So that's quite a significant jump.
Ting Wei, tell us, SMRT Trains' operating costs ballooned in just a matter of 3 years. How come?
So I think it's actually because the 3 years is the figures that SMRT provided to us. But I think it has been ongoing for maybe a couple more years before that. So what sparked all this is, I think, when we remember back in around like start of around 2011, I think there was a massive train breakdown, and after that there were issues of train reliability. So we were having problems of train breakdowns quite often. So after that, the operators and the government has been working together to invest in raising train reliability. There's been a lot of ongoing projects, like what we see, the sleeper replacements, early closure to work on other things to upgrade the train tracks such that breakdowns don't happen so often. So I guess, like, with the figures that the authorities have given and anecdotal evidence, it's not perfect yet, but the train reliability has improved quite a lot in the recent years. But all this comes at a monetary cost. So that's why I think with all these different projects, the cost has to keep going up. So that's why we are seeing the expenses increase.
Right.
Well, Ting Wei, I understand the challenges. I mean, tell us, what challenges does SMRT Trains face in trying to increase ridership and obviously revenue as well without rising fares?
So, because if you are talking about a private company, like maybe an airline, or even like, let's say, okay, using the example of like airline, maybe like say Singapore Airlines hypothetically, if they want to increase revenue, what they can do is, like, other than raising prices, they can offer commuters other things, like maybe doing some promotions to get more demand in, or putting in more planes, flying to more locations, getting different partners to come on board to try to give the consumers more choice or a cheaper fare and increase the demand. So for them, there are quite a few avenues to increase the revenue coming in. But in terms of public transport, especially when you look at Singapore, it's a small country. For the trains, it's kind of, the demand is quite fixed. Because, I mean, if you need to take public transport to go to school, you need to take public transport to go to work, you have to take it. You can't possibly walk to work, or you can't possibly buy a car if you don't have the money to buy it.
Sure.
So in terms of that, you have a fixed customer base, people rely on it. But on the flip side, you don't have the ability to draw more people to take public transport. Say, for example, it's not really possible for SMRT to offer incentives to car users to stop using their cars and choose MRTs as a form of transport.
Sure.
So in terms of how high they can increase the demand, it's very limited.
We're speaking to To Ting Wei from the Straits Times in our segment called Move, all about the transport sector. Now, switching gears to the personal mobility devices space. PMD users will now be subject to much greater scrutiny thanks to an unspecified number of CCTV footage now scattered, or rather, the number of CCTVs now scattered across the island. And the Land Transport Authority also now allows users to report errant behaviour from PMD users through its mytransport.sg app. Now, bugbear for many pedestrians I know when it comes to errant PMD users is they tend to be travelling really fast, sometimes way beyond the speed limit, I think now of 10 kilometres per hour. Tingwei, is this something that CCTVs will be able to pick up?
So regarding the specific details for this, it's not very clear yet, but what I understand and heard from LTA so far is that it seems that the system is quite advanced. According to them, the system will be able to identify different devices like bicycles, PMDs, and after that, it will classify them according to the necessary speed limit. So it will flag devices with speed limits that are higher than 10 km, and this works in conjunction with their registration system.
Mm-hmm.
So last month, this new registration scheme kicked in such that all PMDs like e-scooters, they have to display a kind of a number plate similar to a car. So what this CCTV does is when it catches the devices that are speeding, it will also be able to identify their number plate and also and flag these devices.
Mm-hmm. So, and also be able to tell the speed at which it's going.
Yeah, if what I understand is correct, that's that. Because for that, I think not a lot of details are clear. It's just the start of a trial, 18-month trial. So the CCTVs will be on the road for this time.
Mm-hmm. Tell us, how has response been to the PMD reporting function on the LTA's app? And do you know what will LTA do with the information?
So the response, I guess, quite positive from users, but from like pedestrians mm-hmm. who are concerned about PMDs. But there's also some concerns about it. In terms of the good side, because people now, at least in a way, they are empowered to be able to do something, because I think the past complaints have always been like, oh, I can't do anything, the e-scooter zoom past me, then I don't know where to complain to. But now it's quite simple. You can just open the app, which you use to check bus timings and stuff, and take a photo and report it through the app, and it will go to LTA. But the flip side, like for some people, they are saying like if an e-scooter is speeding or it's at night, the e-scooter will just zoom past you, and by the time you take out your phone,
it's too dark.
Yeah, it's too dark, or you'll be seeing the back of the e-scooter. Right. Because
or your face is in the pavement, so
yeah,
can't
correct.
See
so some people are concerned whether how effective this will be, because I mean, if the e-scooter is speeding, your hands are not going to move that fast, or your camera is not going to be that good to capture the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
But other than the specific devices, the value of this app is that it gives the location to LTA.
Mm-hmm.
So LTA has said that with the locations, like if they receive a lot of complaints from a particular location, say mm-hmm. Toa Payoh, where we are at now, they can identify this area as a hotspot, and mm-hmm. then they can deploy more people to come here to step out enforcement efforts.
I see.
So it might not directly benefit, might not directly catch the person that's causing trouble at that point in time, but in the long term,
let's at least reduce the number of incidents that happen.
Correct.
Of course. We've also received quite a few number of reports of house fires that were caused by PMDs in recent weeks, and last week you reported that the LTA is considering whether to bring forward its end 2020 deadline that will ban all PMDs without a safety certification. What is LTA's consideration at this point, Tingwei, and why isn't this coming sooner?
Okay, so initially when they set the end 2020 deadline, it was kind of in response to concerns from both PMD retailers and PMD users, because I think in the last few years, maybe last 2 or 3 years, a lot of PMD users have bought these devices and they are not certified, because actually I think, if I'm not wrong, in the whole world, only Singapore uses this certification, and it was announced only in September last year. So by September last year, quite a lot of people have already bought the devices.
Yeah.
So it's not something that, like, and it's not that cheap also. I mean, it ranges from around $400 to as much as $1,500. So people will want to continue using that because mm-hmm. when they first bought it, they will think that, oh, I have so much time to use it.
Mm-hmm.
Or there's no like cap when I can't stop using it. So that's why when LTA said it needed the devices to have this standard UL 2272, they have to, like, they gave a grace period for users and retailers to adapt. So I think that's also the main consideration now for LTA in terms of whether to switch the deadline forward, because for all those users who have bought the non-certified e-scooters before July this year, they would think that they have at least 1.5 months to use the devices, but now the period just got cut short.
Shorter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think understandably these people are angry, and I mean, not all of them are very well off. Some of them are maybe delivery riders depending on it for a living, so
sure.
they will need the devices.
So you can't use it?
Once
the ban is implemented?
Yeah, so because like once the ban is implemented, you are not allowed to use these devices on public streets. So basically, you can't ride them on the streets. And I'm not very sure about the penalty, but currently, if you ride an unregistered device, the fine is $2,000.
Mm-hmm.
And I think
that's
very
quite
short
hefty.
Jail term. Yeah, so I have to double check on the penalty for these non-certified devices, but there will be, I'm sure there will become clear once LTA announces whether they are going to bring it forward or not.
Mm-hmm. Okay, about 2 days ago, Ting Wei Manpower Minister Josephine Teo called on taxi companies and drivers to embrace a change in the face of a digital disruption. Well, you sat in the one-hour meeting with drivers of ComfortDelGro Taxi where Mrs. Teo spoke. Can you tell us more?
Oh, so the main thing that came out of this meeting is that the drivers were saying that they were very concerned with the Grab competition from ride-hailing apps like Grab and Gojek. So I think we all know that maybe like around before 2013, before the ride-hailing apps come in, taxis were kind of kings on the road. Mm-hmm. If you want to get a taxi in the morning or peak hour, it's really very hard to get one because they have all the customers to choose from and mm-hmm. they can choose where they want to go to. So after Gojek and Grab came in, I mean, because they are heavily subsidized by investors, they have been offering lower prices to commuters and also, say, more user-friendly apps and stuff. So that has drawn quite a lot of commuters, I think for me included, to use ride-hailing apps instead of taxis. For this, it obviously affected the taxi driver's earnings. And for some of them, because they are not so young anymore, it's not so easy to just switch from what they have been doing their entire life to something that's new to them. So there was a major concern. And another concern was about the 75-year-old retirement age. Because now at 75, taxi drivers have to give up their vocational license regardless of how their health is and stuff. So there were some drivers who were concerned about this because they wanted to keep working.
Will those be addressed?
So for that, actually, the discussion between Minister Teo and the drivers were quite candid. So in terms of 75 age requirements, she actually said that she agreed with these drivers and she would look for the right occasion to support their cause. So, but that one, because I think it's quite preliminary, so but maybe it gets the ball rolling. In terms of the competition from ride-hailing apps, Minister Teo acknowledged that it affects their business, but she also said innovation is necessary. Because at the end of the day, if you look at the ride-hailing apps, even though they affected the drivers' incomes, it benefited consumers. And it's also a more efficient way of hailing a cab as opposed to waiting by the roadside and hoping that a car comes by. So she acknowledged that they were affected, but she said like in order to help them cope, there will be lessons to help them sort of adapt to use digital apps to help taxi driver companies adapt to the new situation. And she encouraged them to embrace change, basically to change from what they're used to and embrace new technologies to overtake these ride-hailing apps.
Tolting away from the Straits Times, thanks so much for your insights.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.